Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a fascinating guest today. If you're a conspiracy theorist, oh, you're going to have a ball. But I would say, more than anything else, Jim Mars has put together a book that is thought-provoking. If you like to ask questions, well, you're going to be in the right company today, because that's exactly what he does. And sometimes, the answers, well, they might surprise you. This is Donna Sebo. My guest today is Jim Mars. We're talking about the book, Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Donna. It's great to be with you.
I'll tell you what. I went through this book and I thought, this is some pretty neat stuff. You have really done your homework, and I want to let my listeners know a little bit about you. You're a native of Fort Worth, Texas, and you earned a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of North Texas and took your graduate courses at Texas Tech in Lubbock. Now, you've done an awful lot of writing. You've been involved with a number of different newspapers. You also, starting in 1968, served as a police reporter and a general assignments reporter, doing all kinds of interesting stories in Europe and the Middle East. You went to serve with the 4th Army Intelligence Unit during the Vietnam War. You became a military and an aerospace writer, as well as an investigative reporter. So your path was really leading you towards this direction. You've been very successful with a number of books that you've written. You wrote Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy. And you've gotten into investigating unidentifiable flying objects. You've written about that. You really have had quite a fascinating career. Did you ever think that you would be walking a path of experience that had so many unique twists and turns in it?
No, not really. I guess you could say, Donna, I'm the last of a dying breed. I'm a generalist. I know a little bit about a whole lot of things, and I don't claim to be an absolute expert in much of anything, but, you know, I think we need people like that. We need generalists, because today we're becoming such a highly specialized society, you know, and doctors know how to doctor, and lawyers know the legal system, and computers know computers, but we need somebody to kind of looking over the whole broad spectrum and saying, hey, what's this all about? And actually, that's kind of where I'm coming from, Donna. I pledged to be a journalist and pledged myself to try to find out the truth as best I could and tell it to the public, and I really thought that's what I was supposed to be doing, and it was kind of a shock to find out that not only did government and corporate leaders not really want you to know the truth, but then you had to fight your own editors because they were afraid of libel suits and losing advertisers, so they didn't really want the truth. And then what was really bad was I found out there's a segment of the population that says, oh, I don't want to know that. Don't tell me about that. So it's been a real adventure. But, yes, all I did was try to find – I just started off – I've always been very inquisitive, and I just started off saying, well, you know, what's the truth? What's really going on? And as you said, it has led me into some pretty strange byways.
So much of programming on television today has a positioning where there are a lot of subliminal messages that are being given out there. And it's not unusual. This is nothing new. But it really has reached, I think, a very heightened positioning. Anymore, when I'll watch any of these series, I happen to see 24 for the first time the other night. And I guess it's been on for a while, and I'm just not really big on television. I'm so busy reviewing stuff for my show. But it was fascinating to me, all of, as I perceived it, and maybe that makes me a conspiracist, but I was looking at this programming, and all kinds of subliminal things were being implied. And I looked at this, and I said, this is intriguing. It's as if someone says, if we can't get the truth out in one way, we will tell it in a form of a story. And that has been, I think, the safe way forever, especially in sophisticated societies, because you're right. There are so many people that don't want to hear, and or they're terrified that if they become a representative of integrity and clarity and truthfulness and are willing to ask questions, then they're considered dangerous. And my goodness, history is loaded. It's loaded with that kind of stuff.
It's the old kill the messenger syndrome.
Oh, very, very much so. And it's ironic that in many ways it seems that that is an application that's very strong today, whether it's in media, in writing. I've interviewed so many different people who are good journalists, who have been very, very dedicated to having integrity with everything that they do, and they have left the industry.
That's why I turned to being an author instead of working for an establishment journal, because you just can't tell the truth and live and do well in a profession today.
It's a very challenging one, because there's been an evolution towards the other direction, and this has been going on for quite a while. This isn't something that's just relative to the 21st century, not at all.
Absolutely. You know, I'm reminded of even back in the 70s when I was still working for a daily newspaper, I had an editor come to me and said, why don't you quit writing about the Kennedy assassination or the dangers of nuclear power, and why don't you just stick to writing those light, fluffy feature stories that you do so well? And I told him back then, I said, well, you know, I enjoy writing those light, fluffy feature stories, and I'd be glad to do that if you'll point me to the one journalist that's really trying to find out what's really going on and tell the public about it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a tough call. It really, really is. It's a very, very tough call. And that's where the Internet, to a degree, has been able to assist. But it takes a real investigator to be able to get through the gazillions of pieces of fluff and stuff that's right there alongside with the reality of what is there. And that's what your book, Above Top Secret, you're not telling people how to think. You are actually wanting to provoke thought. Am I correct in what I've observed?
Exactly. That's exactly it. I consider Above Top Secret a conspiracy primer. This will start you off. This will tell you what the issues are. Give you a little bit of the pros and cons, try to point you in some direction, and then hopefully the reader will take off on his or her own and go out and keep digging into the topics that they're interested in.
You do not choose to talk down to people. You choose to express information in a way you say, okay, here it is. I don't know it all, but I want you to think about these things. And then do your homework and let me know what you have found out. And you have developed a website, before we go into some of the things in your book, AboveTopSecret.com, and you call it a true user-defined media vehicle. How did this come about, and how has it evolved?
Well, actually, that's not my website, okay? My website is jimmars.com, and where I try to post news items that you're probably not going to get from television or from your establishment newspaper. Above Top Secret was actually started by a young man in England, and it was just he created a forum for anybody and everybody who wants to get on there and start what they call threads, which it's a thought or question, and then people join in. And it's absolutely amazing, because it is in this open exchange of information, this crucible of discussion and conversation, that truth usually emerges, because you're right. The upside of the Internet is that anybody and everybody has access to the Internet. The downside of the Internet is that anybody and everybody has access to the Internet. So you have to be discerning, and you have to be thoughtful, and you have to really do your homework to sift through the, what do you call it, the stuff that's on the Internet. And so on Above Top Secret, if someone posts something and says, you know, 2 and 2 is 6, immediately there's hundreds of people posting saying, no, that's not right. 2 and 2 is 4, and here's why. You know, here's how we know this. And it is through that open forum that you really discern some truth. So the people who run Above Top Secret, it's become very successful. I understand it's probably the top viewed alternative news and website in the world. I think they have like 22 million hits or whatever. But they came to me and they said, we want you to write this book, and we want you to touch on the 20 or so top conspiracies, mysteries that are still going on, and, you know, write a chapter on each of them. And I said, my God, I said, there's been whole books written on you know, any one of these topics. And I said, and if I have to go back and start consulting books and publications and websites and citing everything and footnoting everything, I said, you're talking about a massive amount of work there. And they said, no, you don't understand. Said, you've built up some credibility, you've got a name out there, and you've been at it for a long time, about 50 years. And we just want you to just say, well, here's the issue. Here's one side, here's the other, here's what seems to be the facts, and here's what seems to be the truth of the matter, and then let people make up their own mind and begin their investigation from there. And I thought, wow, that's kind of neat. And actually, Donna, this has been one of the most fascinating projects I've been involved in.
I like the way the book is laid out, because with each topic, and we're going to be talking about one in just a moment, you have at the beginning of the chapter on the left side of the page who, what, when, where, why. And then you go into the chapter itself, that particular topic. And what I'd like to do is talk about one that's not so hot right now, but it was just about a month or so ago, and that's oil. And here in the book it says, those who claim that the world supply of oil has peaked and is now in decline, what if the oil supply of oil has peaked? We can look for higher prices and worldwide turmoil. When, now and in the foreseeable future, where, worldwide, why? If the world supply of petrochemicals indeed faces decline, lifestyles and politics will have to change, and new energy sources must be found. Now, in this chapter, I was so intrigued with the information, because as we all know, it was $5 a gallon, and now it's under $2 a gallon. We went to a super high, and then it went low. So who knows who's going to play what game when?
Do you know why it went to $5 a gallon?
Why don't you tell us?
Because they could.
Right.
Because they could. If they were trying to make a profit at $5 a gallon, then you know darn well they're going to be making a profit at below $2 a gallon. So wait a minute, what's going on there? Has nothing to do with supply and demand. It has to do with the artificial positioning of prices.
Correct. And the factor is that as long as nobody complained, that was something. However, the American public, when they saw those prices go up so high, everybody readjusted what they were doing big time. So many areas were affected for vacation times, et cetera. People said, no, I'm going to stay home. I'm not. And this was just this past fall.
That's right.
I'm not going anywhere. Over 800,000, I believe, gallons or barrels a day diminished. They weren't being used. We
right.
weren't ordering it because people weren't buying it. It was
and, you know,
amazing.
This has been the common thing all along. See, I guess I've lived too long. I go back to about 1974, I think it was, 73, the first big oil shortage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're out of oil. We're out of gasoline. And older listeners will recall, you drive around looking for a gas station that had a green flag hanging out front, meaning they had gasoline. If they had a red flag, it means they were out of gas. Well, about that time, I had bought property up in a rural county here in Texas, And on the weekends, we'd drive up there, and I'd go into the little bitty town near here, and there never was any red flags. They had plenty of gasoline. And at that time, that's because a lot of the gas stations were mom-and-pop operations. They were just owned by local people. So I'd ask them, well, how come you have gasoline? They'd say, well, if we go to Texaco and they say we don't have any gas to sell, then we just go to Gulf and we'd buy it from them, or we'd go somewhere else. And then I got to checking around. I found out from some sources in Houston that the tank farms down there were filled with gasoline. And in fact, there were tankers steaming in circles in the Caribbean because they couldn't. There wasn't any place for them to offload because the tanks were all full. So I realized right then that the gasoline shortage of the early 70s was a hoax. It was a phony. It was a scam. And all it was accomplished is they doubled the price of gasoline and they ran most of the mom-and-pop operations out of business so that the giant oil, multinational oil corporations then not only controlled it at the wellhead and controlled the refining process and the distribution, but then they gained control over the retail outlets.
That's very true. I know families here in Washington that had some gasoline stations in the state of Washington, and I can remember talking with them. This was back in the 80s. They said, we're not going to be able to keep the station. They're going to be taking it from us. So it's been a very interesting thing to observe. Now, let's talk about running out of oil. You've presented some fascinating facts. Oil is so significant in so many ways. Petroleum contributes to so many of the products that we take for granted today. Gasoline is merely a byproduct of this.
That's very true. You know, we could wean ourselves off of gasoline tomorrow, and there would still be a huge demand for petroleum because it's used in pharmaceuticals and clothing and just plastics and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Now, you bring out a point that I think many of my listeners may or may not be aware of. I know I am, that Henry Ford, when he designed his Model T, he already had a fuel that was hemp-based.
That's correct.
And so I saw you bringing this out in the book, and I thought, wow, there aren't too many people that talk about it, but gasoline was cheaper than the hemp.
Exactly.
So that's why he went to gasoline.
Yeah.
So we have this, but why is it that this, you call it a myth, of we're not going to run out of oil. What goes on here? What's happening here? What's going on inside the earth that we just don't know about?
Well, by the way, along with Henry Ford, Rudolph Diesel, that invented the diesel engine, he originally built an engine designed to run on organic matter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And but he had an accident. He fell overboard crossing the English Channel, and the next thing you know, and all the way up till today, those diesel engines run on petroleum fumes.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's go back to the mid-1800s when they began to realize that petroleum, oil, gasoline, was a very necessary commodity for the Industrial Revolution, not only for fuel, but as lubricants. And they began to take a serious interest in oil, and they began to scientifically study it, and what they found was organic matter within the oil. And they couldn't quite explain how that came to be, so they theorized that, it must have been the results of dinosaurs and ferns and trees that got pressed underground, and then over millions of years they were squeezed until they finally produced this black substance known as oil. And that's where oil came to be known as a fossil fuel. But recent scientific, more modern scientific studies in other countries, particularly that are not totally dominated by the petroleum corporations, are now claiming that oil is actually the result of a hydrogen cracking process that takes place deep within the earth, and that it's almost like the earth's blood, and that it seeps up into these caverns and into these underground formations, which is probably where it picked up the organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that some of the so-called depleted oil reserves are actually now refilling, okay? So, whoa, if that's true, then the earth will replenish itself, and there's plenty of oil now, and there'll be plenty of oil in the future. And, of course, this is not even to discuss the major oil finds, such as up in Montana and into Canada and in Alaska, that they announced they found these huge, massive oil reserves, and then all of a sudden the news about that goes very dark and you don't hear about it anymore. So the truth seems to be that we have, this world is awash in petroleum and will be for a long time to come. But then I kind of hate to go there, Donna, because we are choking ourselves to death on the pollution created by gasoline-fired engines, and we really do need to get off on some alternative fuels or even alternative technologies for getting around, before we just kill ourselves because of pollution.
Well, I think, too, there is a reality that now, and a lot of the car makers are seeing this, it's been very, very difficult because once a major industry has incorporated certain technology because of various tax situations, et cetera, they want to be able to get the value out of their equipment. And our technology today is advancing at such a rate that the technology they have is outmoded. When you have a major company like Ford building a super sophisticated robot-oriented facility, I think it's in Brazil.
It's not in the United States.
It's gorgeous.
I think you're right. I think it's in Brazil.
And here you've got this phenomenal, up-to-date environment, and we're not able to do it here in the United States. So things are going to have to change.
Right.
And I think the average American is not dumb the way they're often perceived to be. And they're saying, what are we going to do? How can we bring ourselves together so that we can bring the self-sufficiency back into the positioning that we had in this nation not all that long ago? And it's going to create, the average individual is the one that's going to motivate the change. And I think that that's a lot of what your book is about. You wanted to encourage the thinking of the individual to say, look, there are some options here, but if you don't question, then you're not going to be able to get any decent answers.
That's absolutely correct. And one of the things that really bothers me is that I know for myself and for most people I know who I consider thinking, open-minded individuals, they do look at these issues, they do study the facts, but when they try to tell their brain-dead neighbors who only rely on television as their source of information, it's like, well, how do you know that? And why, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Why, oh, you're just an idealist. You know, I don't understand why people, if people want to keep their minds closed and don't want to learn anything new and don't want to think in any new terms, hey, that's okay, I'm all for freedom. But why don't they listen to the people who do?
Well, I believe it's a matter of being able to communicate in a way that doesn't involve fear,
right,
but involves a thinking observation process. And either people try to talk above someone or they try to talk down to them like they're a dumb cockroach of some kind.
Right.
And that's not the key. There are so many people that I interact with and they all say, I agree, this has to be changed. Their dilemma is they're so busy making a living, they expect other people that are supposed to have the intelligence to help them out, whether it's their elected representative or whatever, and then they find that they're brain dead. So they...
That's true. No, and you know, there's an added problem to that, in that even thinking people say, well, I don't really understand all about this issue, so they turn to an expert, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Usually a self-proclaimed expert, and usually an expert who is hired or works for one of the very corporations that don't want you to know the truthful information, and that really creates a lot of the problem.
So it's questioning and being willing
yourself.
To challenge. Being
yeah.
willing to challenge, and I think that is so important. Well, you know, Jim, we probably could talk for hours. You've got so many fascinating subjects in here. John Titor. I've never heard of him. And I thought, whoa, this is interesting, and that is an intriguing character. You have all kinds of various points. And, again, these are the top 20 items. Spidery drones. This sounds like an Arthur C. Clarke special. But you've got such wonderful information, and I really do appreciate how you presented it, because you are not in woo-woo land, and I really like that. I really like the practical application. Now, your website is jimmars.com.
That's correct.
And you've got all kinds of news items, and I know we're just about out of time here, but is there anything you'd like to leave with my audience as a thought? Your book, Above Top Secret, is excellent.
Well, I know when I was in school, I was taught that the moon probably tore away from the Earth, and that the moon is just a dead planet. There's not any breeze there. There's not any atmosphere there. There's not any water there. And that oil, you know, was a fossil fuel. And that, I was also told there was light at the end of the tunnel in Vietnam, and that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. All of this turned out to be false, okay? So what I would tell your listeners is, so much of what we think we know is probably wrong. So keep that open mind. You know, your mind is like a parachute. It works much better when it's open.
Jim, you're an absolute delight. Thank you so much for being with me today. And your book, Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age, I think is a must read. It just is so thought-provoking. And if nothing else, you've got some real good resources listed that if people want to go further, they can. All the website information, everything is right here in black and white.
Great. Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome, Jim. It's been a great time having you on the air. This is Donna Sebo. Hey, we're going to come back. I've got more good things to share with you. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me. Join us at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo, Conference, and Film Festival, February 13th through 16th at the LAX Hilton, 5711 West Century Boulevard, Los Angeles. We are bringing together cutting-edge speakers, including David Icke, Sonia Huquette, celebrity and musician David Carradine, Danyon Brinkley, George Norrie, Sean David Morton, Vashali, and many more. Visit www.consciouslifeexpo.com. Or call the box office 800-367-5777 for discounted tickets.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to let you know that I'm going to be at the Conscious Life Expo. You're going to be hearing it mentioned a couple times during the show between now and the 13th of February. And I'm going to be in a booth there, 537, in the ballroom, booth number 537. And also on Friday evening, the 13th, I'm going to be speaking at 7 o'clock that evening. So I invite you to come and to join me. Now, there's going to be also a class. If you are in Western Washington, I'm going to be teaching a class about the mind-brain connection, brain-mind-heart connection, and we'll be pulling it all together. It's going to be on the 25th of April, so you'll be hearing me bring this up off and on. And there's just so much that's going to be going on, and for those of you in Alaska, I have not yet been able to put together a date. I know we have some listeners there, so I just wanted to be sure to tell you that as soon as I have that information together, I will be sending it out in the newsletter. Now, by the way, again, telephone lines are open, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756. So much of what is happening with this fabulous place we call Earth occurs underneath the land plates, and it is related to volcanic activity. The planet is alive. She breathes. She has a whole unique way of her own of expressing herself. And I think of Pearl S. Buck, who was one of my favorite authors when I was growing up. She's world-renowned as a writer. And she wrote about, in one of her books, I don't recall which one it was, how when Mother Nature would awake, Mother Earth would awaken, she would notice a bunch of things crawling all over her, and she'd just sort of wiggle her shoulders, and she'd roll over on these things that were bugging her, and she'd awaken, and then she'd go back to sleep. And of course, when Mother Earth awakens in that particular way, she usually causes quite a bit of upheaval. We like to think that we're so significant as human beings, and my goodness, one volcanic eruption can produce enough power and energy that is mind-boggling. Also, all kinds of stuff goes into the atmosphere that travels around for years. So I came across some information about a volcanologist. His name is Andrew McGonigal, and that's his passion, investigating volcanoes. And, of course, you have to be very alert and very aware. And there's a picture of him that I have in front of me as he's walking on the surface of an active volcano. And when you're in that kind of an environment, you should wear a respirator, which is what he does, because there's mist, there's steam, there's carbon dioxide and sulfur dioxide. And this particular island that they have the picture of him visiting, it's called Vulcano. And it's an active volcanic island off of the coast of southern Italy. Now, they're very interested always in trying to find out when we are going to be having future eruptions. The volcanoes are very much alive. They have their own persona. So they try to measure it the best that they can. And they use distant ultraviolet spectrometers to measure the sulfur dioxide, which is lethal, that is released. That gives them very special indicators. Well, this gentleman, Andrew, has developed a remote-controlled helicopter. He's named it AeroVac 1. And I've got a picture of that in front of me. And it's a fascinating unit. I mean, it looks just perfectly like any other, you know, helicopter you'd ever seen. It's absolutely phenomenal. And he said he wanted to be able to do things more efficiently and accurately as a specialist in dealing with volcanoes. So he said when he can accurately measure CO2, which escapes magma earlier than SO2, then scientists could predict eruptions sooner. And he believes that it would help to implement timely evacuations for nearby populations. And I think that that is very important. But measuring CO2 is really, really difficult. It's a major challenge. Now, his method, he's utilizing sensors that capture gases directly above the volcano. Now, that's not easy to do if you have static instruments. Why? They're going to be destroyed by the magma. Absolutely. However, if you have a remote-controlled helicopter, it can gather data from a safe distance. Now, just recently, Andrew won a $100,000 Rolex award for Enterprise, and his plans are to outfit a fully automated helicopter that is so similar to the unmanned aerial vehicles used by the military. So much of what we have been able to implement in our technology today originated with military intelligence. If ever you have a chance to go to Cape Kennedy, I recommend it highly. You'll be able to see how we were able to efficiently evolve into an application of use of many materials and areas of special technology that the military developed. And that's what Andrew is doing. He has been able to check those resources out. And, hey, they've got all these spy planes and everything else that they use. Why not use it in a way that's doing some good? And can make it better for people that are living around volcanoes. So this is something I think is extremely fascinating. And in another aspect of technology, let's look about what they're finding out about those of you that are lactose intolerant. Now, this it does not come as a big surprise. Many times people, depending on their blood types, are going to be prone to be lactose intolerant. And there are many people in different parts of the world, it's just not a part of their culture. It's just not something that they have. And so over centuries, they just, if they come in to what we often describe as the American way of life, where cow's milk and things like this are very, very common to our environment, they find that it just doesn't work well. Well, they said your nomadic ancestors have a great deal of association with whether or not you are going to be lactose intolerant. Early humans, like mammal, any other mammal, were able to digest milk only during infancy. And if you think about it, most women do not drink a lot of milk. Now, they may want yogurt, but to guzzle down glasses of milk, most women I talk to, they don't like it unless it's sweetened in some way or maybe it's put in a latte. It's got to have something, just straight milk just isn't their cup of tea. Well, when humans started raising cows and it became available, milk became available, an ability to digest it brought a selective advantage. Now, what brought people to this conclusion? Well, apparently there was some genetic research by Cornell University biologist Paul Sherman. He said DNA analysis of skeletons from between 5840 and 5000 BC found evidence that the early group of European farmers were not able to produce the enzyme lactase, which permits the digestion of milk, while people that were born later, they developed that enzyme that would break down the milk. Now, where in regions of the world where dairy farming is not safe or economical because of climate, or maybe the environment creates diseases in cattle, so it presents a lot of problem, populations still have those genes that if they try to take into any kind of cow milk product, it presents a difficulty. But you look at certain African people, the Maasai, they drank the blood of the cows. They don't drink the milk of the cows, but they live off the blood of the cows. And those people were very healthy from all of what was determined about them. So dependent on what your ancestry is, it can have a relationship to what you experience physiologically. And that's something that maybe you might, if you're having a problem with certain ways, certain foods that sit well, others don't be afraid to explore. You know, maybe finding out about your family genealogy will provide you with some answers about why you're comfortable with certain foods, and maybe in other ways that you're not comfortable with other things. So, or you're very comfortable with things. So it's really fascinating. And again, research, we're getting there little by little, where the day's going to be where we're going to be able to have an analysis, maybe with just a drop of blood, and they'll be able to tell us the best kinds of food for our physical well-being, and maybe those nutrients that we need to add to our dietary patternings, and maybe we don't need to add them. But all of this eventually is going to happen. Why? Because there's enough people out there questioning that want to find the answers. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Hey, if you want to give me a buzz, call me at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Oh, have a pad of paper and a pen handy. Have I got a recipe for you. Paragon marinated rib chops with chili marinade and jalapeno preserves. Oh, it's good, it's good, it's good. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Interested in UFOs, the paranormal, predictions, prophecies, and psychics? Then join us along with David Icke, Sean David Morton, Jim Mars, Richard Hoagland, Danyon Brinkley, Sonia Coquette, and many more at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo and Film Festival, February 13th to 16th at the LAX Hilton. Call the box office at 1-800-367-5777 or visit ConsciousLifeExpo.com for more information and discounted tickets.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. And remember, both of those are toll-free lines. All I need is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question after I give you information about anything that you like, and there's no such thing as a dumb question. I'm going to be on Monique Chapman's show today, and I've got a special broadcast that I'm doing with her. She is on Achieve Radio. We're going to be on from 5 until 7, and I'll be taking calls during those 2 hours of time, and so you're more than welcome to check that out. And I just wanted to let those of you know that perhaps are tuning in, because this is Internet radio, that if you have a chance, you're going to be able to hear the program. And if you're wondering where the newsletter is, we are still dealing with some corruption on our major server, and there's been a challenge, and we're trying to get that so that everything is transformed into another situation so we won't have this kind of a delay again. Okay, got that pad of paper and pen handy? Paragon marinated rib chops. Now, this is a recipe by Petite Sarah. This is something that it's so absolutely delicious. I mean, you should fix it for yourself just to tickle the taste buds, and then just know if ever you want to serve something that is absolutely awesome, especially if you like spicy food, this is phenomenal. So I'm going to give you the recipe in two segments. This serves 8 people. So you can cut this in half if you wanted to. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the recipe for the rib chops. Then I'm going to give you the recipe for the jalapeno preserves. So good. And the jalapeno preserves can be fixed in advance. Your rib chops are fixed in advance. Yum. Okay, you're going to need 8 8-ounce pork rib chops. Now, if you wanted to, you could fix this. If you just wanted a straight loin chop, you could do it. But let's just go by the recipe itself. Now, you're going to have a marinade. All you need, again, 8 8-ounce pork rib chops. And then the marinade is the following. You're going to need a cup each of these next 4 ingredients. You're going to need a cup of hoisin sauce, and that's spelled H-O-I-S-I-N, sauce. A cup of soy sauce, a cup of rice vinegar, and a cup of honey. Remember, a cup of each one of those. Hoisin sauce, soy sauce, rice vinegar, and honey. You're going to need a half a cup of sambal oelek. Now, that's Thai chili salsa. Sambal oelek. S-A-M-B-A-L oelek. O-L-E-K. You're going to want 1 tablespoon of fresh ginger chopped. Fresh ginger chopped. 2 teaspoons of fresh garlic chopped. No dried stuff here. You want it fresh. Then you want 2 stalks of green onion chopped to make it nice and fine. You mix all of these ingredients in a bowl. Put them all together. You want to put your rib chops in the marinade and put it in the refrigerator for 24 hours. I recommend a supersized plastic bag if you can. Or if you have a big enough bowl and you can fit it into your refrigerator, fine. I like using the baggies because it allows you to move it around when you have other stuff going on. Bowl or baggie, whatever works. And you want to let those chops stay in the marinade for 24 hours. And when you're ready to cook, all you have to do is remove your chops from the marinade, put them under the broiler or on a preheated grill. Cook them for 5 minutes on one side, cook 5 minutes more on the other side. You want to be sure that they're done. And then you're going to serve them with the jalapeno preserves. Delicious. Absolutely good. Now, here's the recipe for the preserves, your jalapeno preserves. You're going to need 3/4 cup of apple cider vinegar. And again, you can prepare this well ahead. It keeps. 2 cups of sugar, 6 ounces of fruit pectin, 6 ounces of fruit pectin. You're going to need 1.5 tablespoons of cornstarch, 1/2 cup of fresh jalapeno. You need to seed it and slice it. Wear rubber gloves when you're doing this. Remember, these peppers can be very hot. You can get them at any level of heat that you want, so that is your choice. But you want, when you're cleaning them and when you're cutting them and removing the seeds and slicing them, you want to be sure that you have rubber gloves on because you just don't want to bring those fingers anywhere close to your eyes or your mouth because it'll burn like crazy. Then you need 1 cup of red bell pepper, seed, remove the ribs, and slice them. Then you need 1 cup of Asian pears, peel, core, and slice. If you can't find Asian pears, don't worry about it. Use regular pears. But Asian pears are preferred because of the texture of the pears. This is how simple this is. Very easy. In a saucepan, you put your vinegar and sugar, and you heat it until the sugar dissolves. You then add the jalapeno, and you simmer it for 3 minutes. Your cornstarch, you mix with the pectin, and then you add it to your saucepan. Then you add your bell peppers and simmer for 5 minutes. That's what you do. Simmer it for 5 minutes. Remove it from the heat. Add your finely cut pears. Mix it well. Just put it in the refrigerator. If you've got a glass mason jar, just make sure it's sterilized. And go ahead and put it right in the refrigerator. And then, a half hour before you serve your chops, you want that preserve to come to room temperature. And this goes fabulously with a salad, you know, whatever you'd like to fix. Just remember, if you want to have accompaniments with it, you don't want them so highly seasoned that they're going to take away from these wonderful, wonderful flavors that you're going to have with these Paragon marinated rib chops with the chili marinade and the jalapeno preserves. Oh, just absolutely wonderful. So I wanted to share that with you because you can have delicious food, and it doesn't have to have 10 gazillion calories in it, and the flavor is what you want. That's what you want. That's why that recipe is so very, very good. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. That's also a good number for those of you in Canada. And don't forget, we've got the Conscious Life Expo coming up the 13th, 14th, and 15th. If for those of you in the Los Angeles area, I will be there. I will be speaking at 7 o'clock on Friday evening, and I'm also going to have a booth there, booth 537. So I'll be available for many consultations the whole event weekend. So I look forward to meeting many of you there. For you guys out there, if you have kids, you know how hard it is when you're working full-time and spending time with the kids. And so often when it comes to the guys, they feel like they really... They're sort of uncomfortable around babies, around real little ones. And I love this story about a dad, and his name is Mark. And he said he had to do daddy duty one day, and I love this story, so I wanted to share it with you. Mark Musolf is the gentleman that put this story together, and he said when his wife told him that he had to take their son Aaron to a birthday party for five-year-olds, he just went, "Oh, you have got to be kidding. I don't want to be there. That's not what dads do." Well, he was in for quite a surprise, and his wife got sick. You know, moms were always the ones that are out there. We're taking the kids to the birthday party. That's just what moms are supposed to do. Dads will sit home and be involved in something else, or maybe they're busy working. But in this case, his wife, Mark's wife, was just sick as she could be. And she said, "I don't want to even consider going over there. I've got the flu, and you need to go." So he thought, okay, we're just going to be going, and I'd be taking him maybe to a birthday party. He wasn't excited about this at all. Well, his son was just absolutely, absolutely ecstatic about Dad taking him to the party. Well, Dad was even more concerned when he found out that he was going to have to take Aaron, his five-year-old, to a place called Romp and Roam. He didn't have a clue about this place. Well, it's an indoor playground, and he said it's filled with all kinds of stuff just for little kids. And he said, "I had been there, but always with my wife. I just sort of ignored everything." And he said she was always there, and he said I'd read the newspaper, so he zoned out the few times he had been there. Well, he was going to have to do daddy duty. Couldn't get out of this one. And she said, "You're just going to have the best time with your son." And he said, "I love my little boy, but my wife has always taken care of so many things. I just couldn't identify with a lot of things that she could identify with." And he said, I would, you know, cuddle with him, I'd read him stories at bedtime, but I wasn't involved too much with his social life. I figured I'd get into that more when he was older. Well, when they went to the party, Mark's son was so excited. The first thing that Mark realized is that there had to have been about 10,000 mothers there. Of course, there weren't 10,000 mothers, but he said it felt like it. And he was the only guy. There was all these gals. And he goes, "Oh, no. What am I going to do with this? I don't want to talk girl stuff." So he was thinking all of these thoughts about, oh, this is the worst place to be in. However, his son rescued him. And what his son did, he said, "Dad, you want to play with me?" And he said, "Okay, I'll do this." So he followed his young son, And he just followed his son. And he said, we were going up ladders, we were going through tunnels and mazes, we were going into pits filled with balls. He said, I was having a blast. I was following my five-year-old son. He was leading, and I was just following him, and I was having the time of my life. And then one of the moms came up to him and said, oh, it's so nice to see a dad involved with his kid. This is terrific. You're having a wonderful time. And you know what this dad said? He said, I've learned that my son is just about the best company I could ever have. And he said, now I'm even more excited to watch my son grow up because there's so many other things we're going to be able to share together. But I realized you're never, it's never too soon to get involved in interacting with your son. And on that note, I want to say we are out of time here. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll be back here same time, same place, talking about Antarctica tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.